From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Welcome back to more ranting from Postcard from Botbred. I know what's coming up with myself, Eric Wiltshire, Lee Banks in the UK, Mark Gander from the Consumer Action Group in Paris. And here we go. Please put on your ear defenders at this point, because Mark is about to go into outer space.
What?
Yes. In the news this week, cheap bank deals to save Britain as the euro becomes the Costa del flop, says Lee. Right. How are the banks helping us then, Mark?
Well, I can't see that the banks are helping themselves, helping us. They're helping themselves. And I can tell you, here's a bit of embargoed news that's embargoed until tomorrow morning. So by the time this goes out, it'll be all right to say it. There's going to be announcements tomorrow that Lloyds and the rest, but I think it's starting with Lloyds, are putting up their overdraft charges from about 14% up to about 19%. Which you're talking about a third increase. Charges are interest rate. Beg your pardon. Was it interest rate or charges? I can't remember which. But anyway, it's going up.
It won't be interest rates at that level.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, going up charges.
Charges going up.
Well, I mean, a huge amount of money. We're talking about 33% increase, which is going to be levied against people who obviously haven't got much money anyway. And what does this do? Basically, this prevents people getting up, because the banks have crashed them, smashed them down to the ground anyway. These people are trying to, you know, just about get up to their feet, get back on their legs and get going again. And the bank comes along and says, right, well, you know, you're nearly on your feet now, so here's another kick, and we kick you down, and we're going to take more of your money because we see that you're still a cash cow, and we're going to keep you down and keep and drain you. It's an unbelievable business. I'm not sure that the banks are really doing much. Obviously, they're in a hurry to accumulate as much capital as possible so that they can become stable again. Mm. But they're doing it at the expense of anyone who gets in the way.
Well, according to the boss of the Bank of England, Sir Mervyn King, it will provide billions of pounds of cheap credit to banks to lend to companies.
Yeah, but it isn't working that way, is it? They've tried this and it hasn't worked. The very simple fact is exactly what Mark says, that the banks are having a field day at the moment. Everybody is giving the banks, they've got everybody's money, and everybody else in power is giving them more money. Yeah. And this particular move, I'm quite incensed about it, just because sometimes I can be, right? That they say that we are going to give them £10 billion, yeah? Mm-hmm. Which they then need to lend to businesses and private individuals to perpetuate the growth of our economy.
Right, so actually, to use the phrase, kickstart the UK economy.
Perpetuate is another word for kickstart, yes.
Yeah, well, I know where I'd kickstart, and I tell you.
So what I'm saying,
the Chancellor Ed Balls is...
What I'm saying is, instead of giving the money to the banks who created the crisis in the first place, who are having a heyday still of making themselves small fortunes out of it, why not find a method of distributing this money to the general people in the country who need it and desire it and have plans actually boost the economy with?
I've got an idea for Sir Mervyn King. Genuinely.
Yeah, go on then.
And I'm not being facetious.
Find yourself a queen, Mervyn.
No, I'm not being facetious. What, there's, you know, the... we mentioned them on here before, Mark, the clubs that lend money to people.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Peer-to-peer lending.
What's the name of them, Mark?
Well, one of them is called Zopper.
Yeah.
Okay, which is specialises in lending to individuals.
You mean what is the... It's, yeah, there is a phrase, a catch-all phrase for it, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
Yes, so something of the zone of personal agreement, Zopper.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about here, I think there are three of them. I can't remember the other two. One of them specialises in lending to businesses and so forth. And the idea is they cut out the banks completely.
Mm.
And what they do is they get ordinary people to lend, and the money is lent out almost directly to ordinary people.
Well, why don't we do what
very controlled way?
Do what Eric said. And do the lending through those to the people who have ideas to rebuild the country. Why give it to the banks again?
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And, of course, the great thing about these peer-to-peer lending schemes is that they are in direct competition with the banks. And that's what the banks need. They need competition. They've never had competition. They don't know the meaning of the word. And, frankly, I think they're not able to compete. They're so heavyweight and they're so used to the good life. Give the money, you're quite right, give this £10 billion to the peer-to-peer organisations and ask them to take care of that and to see what they can do.
And can I just ask...
I bet you we'll start to see the banks starting to fall into line, then there'll be some changes. Wow.
I have a question then. So with this peer-to-peer lending, I wish I could remember the proper name for it, somebody can email us in with it, but with this peer-to-peer lending, I'm of the view then that they can't go bust like the banks did and get more money from everywhere else. Therefore, before they invest, they are actually making sure that it's not a disastrous investment in the first place and that the people in question are able to pay the loans back.
It would make sense to me that if that was actually going to go ahead, that that was done anyway, that it was made sure that people weren't wasting the money. The simple fact is, and this is why I can't get my head around it, is the fact that if somebody here, if you had a bad builder who built you a rubbish garage that fell down, would you then go back to him and give him more money to build something else at your house? You wouldn't. You'd get rid of him. We keep going back to the banks. And what Mark said about overdraft rates going up is really, really a bad thing. Coupled with the fact that interest rates are going up, but not the interest rates that the banks are having to lend at, they are screwing us left, right, and centre, and getting away with it. And the government are supporting.
Yeah, very weird.
Well, on peer-to-peer lending, I mean, ordinary individuals can borrow money typically at about 7%. This is unsecured, or 8% unsecured. This is very, very good. And the people who lend to them, in other words, the people who make their money available. Because that's the way it works. You decide to lend your money instead of putting it in a bank. You save by contributing to peer-to-peer funds so that it's then lent out. You can make, once again, typically 7%. This is enormously, enormously more than you could get anywhere else. And I've just looked up, incidentally, organisations include Zopa, which stands for Zone, I think it's a technical term, Zone of Personal Agreement, I think, Rate Setter, The Funding Circle, Thin Cats Marketing Voice. And incidentally, this is catching on in the States. It's catching on in China. It is becoming very big. And you're quite right. What a brilliant idea. I hadn't thought about it at all. Why isn't the government looking around at these? The government says they want a banking system which competes. Well, this is the way to do it. The fact that they won't do it shows that the banks, the government really are in cahoots with the banks and they won't really...
They're in cahoots like they're in cahoots with everybody else. But the simple fact with this is... that if they did that, I remember saying to you two gentlemen about 3 months ago that we needed a totally new system, a fiscal system to defend and perpetuate the world. And you both laughed at me and you both took the mickey out of me. But in fact, we are now talking about exactly what I proposed 3 months ago. We need to look at a new system, a new way of promoting and securing fiscality in this world. Otherwise, we're all doomed.
Oh, right. Somebody tell me what that was. Look it up on the internet, Mark. Then we'll get the name before the end of the show. That'll put me out of my misery. Anyway, moving on to, and I'm corrected by many people as I've been getting the name wrong every week, the Leveson inquiry, not Leveson, Leveson inquiry, which this week saw the Prime Minister of the UK, David Cameron, squirming on his chair as he was answering questions from all sorts of interest. Well, so answering questions from one guy.
And being rooted for by Rebecca Wood. I wouldn't mind her rooting for me. I'd root for her.
Sideshow Bob. You don't want Sideshow Bob rooting about in your private underwear.
But it was... This is the question I've got to make, which is a sideways question. Can you just imagine, because I was watching this and the guy was talking about page 2000 and something, da-di-da-di-da, how much money has been spent writing these ruddy reports for this Leveson inquiry, which is going to end up going nowhere anyway?
I think it will. I think that is wrong, and I think that's a terrible indictment of the Leveson.
I think it will, and I think we've got some people looking at a bit of porridge around here.
I think what you're looking at here, talking about specifically about Cameron, is that the Prime Minister of this...
No. What I was asking, Lee, was the Leveson report.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing. The Leveson report has done exactly what it was set out to do, which is to highlight discrepancies and problems within the structure, the hierarchical structure of this country. Mm-hmm. And what the Leveson inquiry has done has shown our Prime Minister to have been caught with his pants down in bed with people all over the place.
Right.
So well, you wouldn't want to be in bed with them with your pants up, would you?
No, that'd be rather that'd be pointless.
I'm not too sure. You have you looked at Mr. Cameron recently?
Not that closely. Sure. Listen, at the very least, one thing the Leveson report achieves is that it's getting everybody in the open and squirming. So even if some of these people do end up to be a Teflon slippery Sam, and maybe don't get their comeuppance at the end, the fact they've been put through this is a pretty good exercise. So that's a very good start.
Do you think, though, that it will actually change the relationship, not in terms of biblical sense, you understand, in terms of the relationship between politicians, big business and the media?
Well, yes, because they'll do things in a way they don't get caught in future.
Well, so it's not going to achieve anything then.
I think that really
for a while.
Is. I think you've got to look at it sensibly and be realistic when you talk about things like this. The Daily Mail says it was like that watching cameras was like watching a little girl take to her bicycle for the first time without stabilizers. And I think that phrase there actually is more condemning of the ability of David Cameron to run a country than anything else is. This man was rocked to the grave by what was happening to him. And the only reason it was happening to him is because he did it, Gov. He did it. Yeah. And going back to what Mark has just said...
They've all been caught out. Absolutely, I mean, they're all caught out.
They're not all Prime Minister of a country. No, they're not. There's only one Prime Minister of a country.
So are you telling me from in modern history, if we go back to Harold Wilson in the 60s, then come through everybody else, including Margaret Thatcher, Tony Blair, and through to Cameron, and Gordon Brown as well. Are you telling me that none of them actually sucked up to the media?
I'm not saying anything like that at all. Brown was a bully. Blair was a warmonger. You've got this man who is just a social climber.
That's not the question.
I'm answering the question now, if you let me get there. The simple fact is that really what will come out of the Leveson inquiry by the end of it is that journalists were not particularly deeply in bed with politicians. The businessman aspects of it could well be that Murdoch and people of his ilk were very much in bed with the government and David Cameron and people of his ilk.
And the journalists themselves were people who were on the outside. Governments, not one government, all of them.
Governments need a publicity machine, and the best publicity machine is the one that already exists. And if you use people who generally are used to write press releases and try and get their people into the news, into the media, into the news media, these people, as we know, Eric, are not very good at it. What you need is a professional to do it. But the people at the top, the people who run our lives and our countries, need to have more chutzpah and more sense than to take on somebody who already was involved in investigations into phone hacking and make him one of the most powerful men in the country. David Cameron is losing credibility left, right and centre at this moment.
It's not just Cameron, though, Lee. If you look at the reports, and it's very easy to see, Mr. Brown wasn't terribly happy.
He was just a thug.
No, nothing to do with that. Mr. Brown wasn't happy.
Well, of course he wasn't happy.
Mr. Blair wasn't happy. Mr. Cameron wasn't. No, it's nothing to do with any of those things. What's important is the question goes back to the relationship between leaders of countries and the particular media of that country.
I agree with you, and that's what I've just supported what you're saying. I've said that the media are on the outside and always will be on the outside. They are people who have charm and ability and ways of inveigling their way into positions instant offices of power.
Well, there's a solution,
that doesn't mean that they necessarily do that. The solution, well, no, there isn't a solution, because if you lose the ability of the press to move freely or covertly even within places of power and authority, then these mysterious things wouldn't come out.
There's a simple solution.
Well, this is going to be fatuous.
No, it's not. I'm being very serious. Politicians should not talk to journalists.
Well, then that's fine. And that is the end of freedom of speech within the country, and we might as well all go and live in communism somewhere in a salt mine. Because one of the basic rules of journalism is that we pass on the information about what is happening in your world and your country and your family and how the government is operating.
Please.
How can you remove that kind of information?
No, if the politicians stop talking to the press, then there won't be any accusations about anything. They won't be able... Listen to me. They will not be able to put things out through the press, which they shouldn't be doing anyway. And they won't be able to leak stuff to the press, which they shouldn't be doing anyway.
So how does the population find out about what's going on?
They've got television, radio and the internet.
Oh, so it's allowed to go on the radio, television and internet?
Why not?
Well, not in the newspaper.
Why not?
Well, because I tell you what, that'd be fine. Do that. That's fine, because all we'll do, we'll go and lift it off the television, the radio and the internet. And then we'll go and investigate it and make it better and tell you the truth.
I give up. Good news on the Olympics. I can't believe that. Sports Minister Hugh Robertson says the London Olympics are set to come in at £9.3 billion.
Amazing.
Under budget.
I know. It'd be like a relay
billion.
Race, wouldn't it?
9.3 billion?
Yeah.
It'd be like a relay race.
It's like rebuilding an engine, and you find this round thing left over at the end of the. They've left something out.
They must have done.
I bet you. When they start it, they think, "Oh, hang on, we forgot to send out the invites to the athletes." Or 9.3 billion. It's just amazing.
I think that's
half a billion. They're giving half a cut.
I think that's a bit of PR puffer, if you want my honest opinion.
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's so factious. It's unbelievable.
And where's it going to go? Where's it going to go? Instead of it being reinvested into this regeneration zone, they're going to give it back to the government. They're going to give it back to the Treasury. So, like I say, it'd be like a relay race. Half a billion back, and then they hand it over to the bankers, and the bankers dash off with it into the distance.
Well, 9.3 billion off the deficit would be kind of a good thing, really.
It's not. It's half a billion.
It says 9.3 billion.
It says the Olympics are set to come in under its 9.3 billion budget.
Right.
I thought it was 9.3 billion under budget.
Well, that's how I read it, but never mind. So basically, they're not doing a lot of good then.
Well, no, not really. No, why is it coming so cheap? Like Mark says, what they done, what they missed out, which corners have they cut? Do you go there and found out that the running track is square instead of round? I don't know. It's a funny thing.
I just wondered if it couldn't be, just for a change in Great Britain, that somebody's actually managed to do it cost effectively for a change.
Wouldn't that be incredible if that had happened? And you know what? Nobody would publish it. That is a travesty that somebody got it right and that this is it. Because I thought this story, when I saw it, the way it was presented, half a billion saved on, I think it was in the Daily Mail, half a billion saved on the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the sort of headline they would use on it and the sort of story they would use. In it, there is actually no explanation of how it was saved and things like that. So I think it is just a PR puff, if you forgive the phraseology, right, to boost the Olympics. But actually, like you say, there is a deeper, more fascinating story in there. How did they do it?
Yeah, because if that is the case, then it would show British industry as being an absolute flagship.
Absolutely, 100%. Why don't we campaign for that? This is the building industry, which in Britain, everybody says is on its knees, and actually it isn't. It
no,
is
not.
Actually a burgeoning industry. And this actually, when you think about it, could be the proof of that. Let's us go for that.
Oh, no, but you've got a problem there, Lee. It's a positive story.
Yeah, I don't want that, do we?
No. The real shame of the internet finally revealed, says Lee.
Well, this is the thing, and it, for years now, since we've been doing the show, I've argued against clamping down on personal freedom and things like that. And particularly on the government having access to your computers and where you go on the internet. Sure. But I think that actually this could be the one real reason that governments should have access to your computers. Mm-hmm. MPs are to investigate the sexual exploitation of children all over the country, down to the fact that we now have chat rooms that people meet, that 13-year-olds are being brought into all sorts of terrifying sexual acts, mm-hmm. Sexual acts that involve not one person with another person, group sex involving children, and it's all down to the internet. Mm-hmm. This is why the internet
so
is
are you saying, lowest form. Are you suggesting that it didn't happen before the internet?
To be honest, and I'm gonna pull rank here. Mm-hmm. As somebody who investigated in the late 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. Early 90s, the satanic abuse of children in Britain, and I got very heavily involved in that and worked on that for 3 years. Mm-hmm. As somebody who's written a book on the Axis of Evil, the Axis of Evil in Manchester and Rochdale and things like that, I know exactly what was happening. Mm-hmm. Before it was something that there were notice boards when the internet first came out where all this sort of thing went on. Mm. But it is now more prevalent. There is no doubt it's more prevalent, Eric.
No, I'm not suggesting it's not, Lee, but I think what we've got to be very careful of, as one who worked in the telecommunications industry, if it is that you are trying to track a group who are using the internet per se, it's a very simple, not simple, it's trivializing it a bit, but it's a much easier way of being able to track them down compared to the old ways, which were bulletin boards, which you had to dial into, meaning it was one connection to a second connection, nothing in the middle. And you know, as a former BT engineer, to try and find that one piece of wire that's connected to that other piece of wire is an absolute nightmare. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. Whereas with the internet, the other side of it is the case where if you, and this is absolutely true, never put anything on the internet unless you're prepared for it to come and bite you on the bum later, because it will do. You can be tracked. And that's the important thing. And I think that's something that you mentioned last week, Mark.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. I think you've got to be very, very careful. And in fact, I met somebody today. I was talking to a lady today who was saying that there was various bits of information which she wished she'd never put up on the internet, and she was going to spend her time now getting it off. And I said, you're crazy. You never manage to do it. You really won't.
Really? Well,
that's right, but this is a bit deeper than some lady who's put something on the internet and now regrets it.
I agree with that, Lee.
But this is the fact, and this is going back to what you said, Eric, that this sex thing involving children, there were always rings of perverts in areas. Every area had one, but now this is absolutely gigantic and so big that now the government is actually looking into it and looking for ways to beat it. When Rochdale and Cleveland and places like that happened, the government were against doing anything about it because it involved social workers. Now this is horrendous that 11-year-old girls are being gathered together for sexual acts. That is awful, and it is all down to...
I'm totally with you. I have to say, I'm totally with Lee here. You know, quite frankly, breach any freedom necessary to protect these children and to deal with these people who start perpetrating this kind of disgusting, oppressive, and really lifelong damaging behaviour. I think that's absolutely right.
Indeed. I think that's summed it all up beautifully, Mark. Thank you. A little bit of fun as we get to the end of the programme.
Am I going to be able to tell people about my magazine appearance?
Go on, then.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I say that tomorrow, which in real terms will be Saturday the 16th, is it, of June?
Yes.
Yeah. Lee G. Banks, is appearing on the front page and in the centre spread of Chat Magazine. My picture will be emblazoned across the front as I tell the mysterious and terrifying story of the real story of the Village of the Damned. The place that murdered Dick Holmes.
You're moving
Vicar.
Then?
No, I'm staying here, man. I'm waiting. I'm all shuttered up.
That this is the story about a certain pensioner.
No, this is the village of the damned. This is Britain's real village of the damned.
Yeah.
The people, the village that hunted
down. He's not going to tell us the story, Mark.
And caused him to hang himself like an old dog in the stairwell of his home, and then continued to build up this fallacy, accusing this man of all sorts of heinous crimes. Yeah. And 20 years down the line, Lee G. Banks reveals the truth in Chat magazine, one of the biggest and most powerful magazines in the UK, which can be bought internationally.
Right, is that the commercial over?
He gets loads of commercials. Oh, it's Mark. Oh, well, I do this on CAG. Yeah, consumer action group. Yeah. Oh, what are you doing, Mark? What's Paris say? Paris is lovely, consumer action group. All I've done is get a front page in the centre spread in the international magazine on the just off to mention it.
Is the commercial over, Lee?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. An application to give listing status. Listing status means it's kind of an important thing. To Coronation Street, which is a soap opera. In Slovakia, people, we'd call it Panelak. It's very similar. Which would help secure its future when it is vacated next year. And the local authority have said no. And I quite agree.
Absolutely ludicrous. Why? Yeah. It's a complete. It's one of the most historic monuments we've got. It's the most famous.
Doesn't qualify for listing
across the world.
Doesn't qualify for listing.
How can it qualify for listing? I agree.
Well, I think it's got to be at least 30 years old, apart from anything else.
Yeah.
Well, it's 50 years old anyway.
It's not. It's not 30.
It is. Why?
The program might be, but not those buildings.
No.
Those buildings are actually built in a part of Manchester which is surrounded by listed buildings.
Right. And those listing buildings after all this rain, I imagine.
So basically what you're saying is that you want listed building status to a fictional street.
Well, yeah, why not? Because it has become one of the most important and well-known streets in Britain today and across the world. It is a tourist attraction. It brings in money from all over the world. It brings in interest. Kudos.
Quick question. Hold on. Quick question for Mark, because which I will precursor with a comment from Slovakia. Thank goodness Coronation Street's not on our telly here. Do you have Coronation Street on your telly, Mark?
I don't know. I've never watched it in my life.
There you go then, you see. So it's not that important then, Lee. So two to one.
It's important. I mean, I've got, because somebody who hates Paris where he lives, somebody who lives in Slovakia who's only got a little...
I think you've got a vested interest. You're in Manchester. You obviously want to try and sort of, rejuvenate the area. And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Well, the whole area around it has been rejuvenated. Manchester is a hodgepodge of ludicrous decisions as far as designing buildings are concerned.
Anyway, there is some good news as we end the programme on something that is known globally. Dallas is back, and we look forward to seeing the young Bobby Ewing.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.